All we've got left is to talk about postmodernism. However, it's impossible to talk about postmodernism without talking about modernism first. And I really think to talk about modernism, you got to talk about what we now call pre-modernism. What came before modernism? So we're going to have to kind of backtrack a little bit. And modernism is almost synonymous with secular humanism, the idea that through reason man could find truth, and through technology solve all our problems. So let's start with a little overview of the history of Western civilization, starting with pre-modernism. Now, pre-modernism runs from ancient Greece through medieval times. Okay, you know, one thing I don't like is when people, if I hold to a particular theological view, and people say, well, you just hold that because, you know, you got that from, you're a little bit too much into Greek philosophy. Because the truth of the matter is, Greek, you could find a Greek philosopher, you know, for every view that there is. I mean, these guys debated everything. You know, there's no such thing as, you know, an idea that one of these guys didn't come up with, okay? So, it's hard to really give, you know, say, well, this is what Greek philosophy is all about. This is what the Greek philosophers taught, because they all disagreed with each other. But when everything's said and done, there are some Greek philosophers who won the debates and who influenced Western civilization more than any others. I mean, when you had, like, philosophers like Thales, and Anaximander and Anaximenes, these guys were like materialists. They were trying to just look for a natural material explanation for everything, and they wanted to just throw out the myths altogether, okay, throw out the supernatural altogether. But they lost, because by reducing everything to just material things, they left a lot of questions unanswered. They couldn't explain a lot of things, okay? Naturalism, materialism, even in ancient Greece, 500 years before Christ, that always leads to skepticism. It always leads to the idea, well, we can't know any truth anyway. Let's just suspend judgment on all things, okay? But then you would have Greek philosophers who would show up on the scene and argue for things like moral absolutes and say that we should not be skeptics. Augustine, he argued against the skeptics of his day. Now, this is like, you know, 350 A.D. But his response was much along the lines of Socrates and Plato when they dealt with the skeptics. That, number one, skepticism is contradictory. Because if you say, well, I'm going to suspend judgment on all things, well, then you can't, because you're not suspending judgment on your skepticism. Okay, so even the skeptic is dogmatic about his skepticism. But number two is also, it's not livable. You can't suspend judgment on things. You have to decide, hey, I think this food in front of me is not poisoned, I'm going to eat it. I mean, if you're going to just continue to suspend judgment on all things, you're going to stop eating, you're going to die. So you can't live consistent with skepticism. So basically, whenever you had Greek materialists, then it would lead to the skeptics, and then eventually somebody come on the scene, and well, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, they won the day. And though there were people that disagreed with them, people like Heraclitus and Parmenides, and when everything was said and done, Western civilization was influenced by the thought of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle more than any of the other Greek philosophers. And because of that, there were certain widely believed assumptions in Western culture. One is that truth is absolute, that there is absolute, universal, unchanging truth that exists regardless of whether or not we know it or believe it. The truth remains true even if you deny it, okay? And that was something that Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle argued for. Secondly, that truth corresponds to reality. So they would reject the notion of pragmatism. You know, pragmatism reject pragmatism. Pragmatism would argue truth is what works. Okay? They would reject subjectivism. Which is just, you know, truth is relative to the person. Each person decides what is true for them. They acknowledge that truth is absolute and that truth corresponds to reality. Aristotle, his definition of truth was very influential in the history of Western thought. And he said, to say of something that is, that it is truth. And to say of something that it is not, is truth. To say of something that is, that it's not, is falsehood. And to say of something that is not, that it is falsehood. Okay? So what Aristotle was saying is just telling it like it is truth. And so truth is that which corresponds to reality. Okay? Also, it was believed by Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle in pre-modern times that human reason is able to find truth. That through our minds, we can really find truth. We can really know things. It was believed that the universe made sense. Even though Plato would believe, argued that the universe was less real than the world of ideas, the invisible world of ideas, you could still make sense out of it. Aristotle, the physical world was more real to him, as far as he was concerned, than Plato was, but whatever the case, they believed the universe really made sense. It wasn't an illusion, okay? But they also believed in a reality beyond the five senses. And this is important. Atheists, secular humanists, love to claim as their own Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle because they dethroned the myths. They refuted the myths. Okay? But the fact of the matter is, just because they refuted the myths doesn't mean that they didn't believe in the existence of some type of God. And when you find out, but they actually believed in a supernatural realm, a realm of some type of deity or deities, rights and wrongs that transcend the physical world, okay? And all this was part of pre-modernism. And now, the interesting thing was that the Christian worldview, when Christianity in the early 300s began to become not only a legal religion in the Roman Empire, but eventually became the dominant and even the state religion in the Roman Empire. Well, the Christian worldview fit nicely into the pre-modern mindset and actually confirmed it, okay? Because the Christians believed that an infinite rational God created the world, okay, created the universe in an orderly way, and created man in his image, okay? And that man could find truth in the universe because man was created in God's image. It fit together like a glove. In a sense, Justin Martyr went a little bit too far. He tried to argue Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle into God's kingdom. He tried to say they were saved. I think he went way too far with that. And Justin Martyr was a Christian thinker writing about 150 to 170 A.D. One point that he made that I think was really interesting here is that he believed that just as the Old Testament law prepared the Jewish hearts and minds for the Messiah, for the Savior, for Jesus, Justin Martyr believed Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle prepared the Greeks and the Gentiles, their hearts and minds, for the coming of the gospel. Now, I would agree with him on that in one sense. Not that they were saved, but I would agree with him that God was at work, even in the secular world, preparing people's hearts, okay, and paving the way. Now, having said that, you can still find aspects of, let's say, Plato's thought. Plato had no place in his thought for a physical bodily resurrection. And that influenced Greek thought to such a degree that was a hindrance to the spreading of the gospel. You see in Acts chapter 17, Paul preaching on Mars Hill to Stoic and Epicurean philosophers. But there was a sense where the work of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle did kind of prepare. It at least opened the Greek mind that, hey, there is truth, we can find truth, the universe makes sense, there are absolute moral laws, okay? And so in that sense, you could see a little bit of the paving of the way. God, in his providence, preparing even the Gentile nations for the coming of the Lord. But again, Justin Martyr arguing that these guys went to heaven, I think he's going way too far. Now, modernism comes on the picture and changes things, okay? I like to think of Rene Descartes, Newton's scientific work had a lot to do with it, where all of a sudden we came up with this idea of the universe as a machine or a giant clock. And everything works a certain way and very precise way, and it kind of just, the whole idea of miracles gets thrown out the window. Newton himself didn't throw it out the window, but that was the consequences of some of his ideas and all. But Rene Descartes in philosophy, and I think Rene Descartes even more than Newton, Descartes was a Frenchman, lived from 1596 to 1650. He tried to prove everything through reason alone. This was at a point in time when Descartes, as well as many other Frenchmen and many other Europeans, and Descartes was a Roman Catholic, so he wasn't trying to disprove Christianity. In fact, he was trying to prove Christianity. But he liked geometry. And what he liked about geometry most of all was that you had these axioms that were logically necessary. In other words, they had to be true because to reject them, the denial, it's impossible for the denial to be true. So there were these axioms in geometry. And I don't know if you ever took geometry in high school. We had to do the geometric proofs and stuff, and you're working off something that we can logically deduce. What you can logically deduce from one of these axioms, one of these points of certainty. Well, I agree with Blaise Pascal, who disagreed with Rene Descartes, that yeah, you have these logical points of certainty in geometry, but that doesn't mean that you're going to have them in the physical world. It doesn't mean you're going to have them on spiritual issues or historical issues or religious issues. And so basically, Rene Descartes was trying to prove too much, okay? But he basically tried to prove everything through reason alone, okay? And so what he decided to do, he took an approach which was called methodological skepticism. Now, what that meant was that he really wasn't a skeptic, but he was going to use skepticism or doubt as a method to try to find truth. And in his case, he was trying to find a truth, a point of absolute certainty, something that he could not doubt. And then from that point, he would try to deduce everything else. And so Rene Descartes was going to try to prove everything, God's existence, our existence, everything through reason alone. Okay? Now right away, Blaise Pascal, a contemporary, a fellow Frenchman, and also a mathematician and scientist, said, look, if we could prove everything through reason alone, what need is there for revelation? So what he's telling Descartes is, look, Descartes, you're trying to prove Christianity through reason alone. In actuality, you're going to create the biggest enemy Christianity has ever had. Because if we can prove everything through reason alone, we don't need revelation from God. And that's what Christianity is all about. So Descartes tried to prove everything through reason alone. Another problem Descartes would have with this, a lot of people see Descartes as an irrationalist. Somebody who rejected reason. Everybody knows Descartes was an extreme rationalist, okay? But Pascal actually held to a very high view of reason. He believed reason does work. But he believed two things about man. One is that we're limited. So if we're limited, our reason is limited. It automatically has built-in limitations. And number two, because we're fallen, our reason is fallen. So yes, we might be able to add 1 + 1 and come up with 2 and get it right, but we could also add 1 + 1 and come up with 3 and get it wrong. So reason is not infallible, and it's limited. Pascal also saw, because of the fall, most of the decisions we make have nothing to do with reason. In fact, usually, we believe what we want to believe, we conclude what we want to conclude, and then we use our reason in an unethical way to try to prove what we already believe. Okay? So that's why Pascal tried to tug more at the strings of the heart. Okay? But he had a more realistic view of reason. Rene Descartes, on the other hand, he acted like... See, Rene Descartes would say, man is a rational being, period. Blaise Pascal would say, man is a rational being, comma. Okay? In other words, we're rational, but we're more than just rational. And when it comes to our decision-making process, reason is one of the last things we appeal to. Our intuitions, our passions, our will, our emotions. Pascal could say that, the most brilliant thinker in your town could show up to hear a preacher preach. But if the preacher had a bad haircut and a bad shave, and if there's a fly buzzing around the thinker's face, and if the preacher preaches in a monotone voice, the most brilliant guy in the whole town isn't going to be able to understand one word that that guy said. What he's saying is, you can have the most rational guy there, even a little bug is enough to toss reason aside. But with Rene Descartes, there were so many inventions, the founding of modern science and and so many positive consequences of human reason that all of a sudden he got this blown up view of reason that he thought, okay, I can prove everything through reason alone. So he began to use skepticism as a method. He began to doubt everything until hopefully he could find something that he could not doubt. Okay? And what he arrived at was this. He said, the more I doubt, the more certain I am that I, the doubter, exist. So if he doubts everything, he realizes, well, if I'm doubting everything, then I, the doubter, have to exist in order to doubt. And doubting is a form of thinking. And so he came up with this, what is in Latin called cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. Okay? And so that was his point of absolute certainty, and then from that he tried to deduce everything else. Two things about that. Number one, a lot of philosophers would question whether that's really a point of absolute certainty. Norman Geisler, I think, has got it better. It's not so much logical necessity, but it's an existential necessity. I don't want to get too much into it, but it's actually, in other words, he's saying it's actually undeniable that I exist, because in order for me to deny my existence, I have to exist in order to make the denial. So, but that's different from saying it's logically necessary, okay? But so some would question whether that is logically necessary, if it's really a point of logical necessity. But others, I think it's everybody's pretty much in agreement that if you started with that point, you wouldn't get everything that Descartes supposedly deduced from it. Okay, I mean, even eventually, he comes down to trying to prove the existence of the world outside of our minds through reason alone, not through the world of the senses. Okay. And so in his attempt to prove the world outside our minds, okay, he says, well, God isn't a demon. God wouldn't deceive us. God's a good God. He's not a demon. He wouldn't deceive us. And I suppose you could say, well, that he deduced that from reason if you believed that his argument for God's existence through reason alone is valid. But that can be questioned as well. But basically what I'm getting at is he ends up making assumptions that presuppose some of the things he's supposed to be proving. Okay? So in other words, he's not proving everything through reason alone. He's trying to. He thought he was. But I think most philosophers since Descartes have agreed that there were an awful lot of non-rational assumptions that were made. Okay, be totally honest with you, I don't think that we should have any confidence in our reason, in human reason, unless we presuppose a rational cause for the universe in which we live. In other words, I think that if we don't assume the existence of a personal God, then human thinking doesn't make any sense at all. It's just a game that we play. So there's a sense where I think that belief in God is an assumption or a presupposition. At the same time, if we don't make that presupposition, then I don't think we really can. We're not justified in coming to any conclusion. So. So in other words, you know, you could almost say, I think, therefore I presuppose God exists. You know, so It's not so much that our thinking proves that God exists, but we think because God exists. And if God doesn't exist, then our thinking has no more value than you know, the arbitrary movements of an amoeba. There really is no sense whatsoever. But whatever the case, modernism grew out of this Cartesian thought. It was the attempt to find all truth with certainty through unaided human reason. It was also an attempt to solve all our problems through human reason, through technology. Okay? And so so eventually, Descartes created a monster trying to prove God's existence. He created a monster which said, hey, we don't need revelation from God anymore. So guess what Descartes thought led to modernism? Guess what modernism... Descartes' views actually led to deism. We throw God out the window, we don't need him. And then eventually that leads to atheism, where the modernist then says, well, what's the difference between an irrelevant God and no God at all? Yeah, Rob, you had your hand in this. Okay. Yeah, and Descartes was a Christian, but again, it's because of Christianity. Okay, human reason before Christianity came on the scene, human reason was caged up. Okay? Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, Greek philosophers like them, who believed in the validity of human reason, opened the doors of that cage, but it just allowed human reason into a bigger cage. So it was still caged up, okay? Because there was always that chance that, you know, maybe this is just a big game. Maybe this is just a big joke. What is our guarantee that our reason and our senses are not lying to us? And that came from Christianity. That's what opened the gate. That's what opened the prison in which reason found itself. And so all of a sudden, the floodgates were open for human reason to do its thing. Modern science got started. We had all these inventions coming down. And all of a sudden, we were so in love with the gift of human reason given to us by God, the gift giver, that then we began to focus so much on human reason, the gift, that we began to forget about the gift giver, and eventually we started using the gift, human reason, to try to disprove the existence of the gift giver. So it's kind of like this. God as the creator, okay, was the foundation upon which human reason began to really take off. Okay? Without the foundation of God, human reason had no justification for itself. Okay? So then, these modernists, after Descartes, tried to use human reason to remove God. The problem there is that they're not just removing something up here. If you remove God, you're removing the whole foundation, the whole basis for reason. Okay? Again, the whole reason why modern science got jump-started and it was founded by Christians is because these Christian thinkers believe that a rational God created the universe in a reasonable way, a way that makes sense, an orderly way, and created man in his image, in God's image, so that man was a rational being, and he created us in such a way that we could really find out about the order and find out truth about the universe in which we live. But then scientists went on and tried to use their science because they found so many natural causes. They thought, you know, eventually, given enough time, we'll find a natural cause for everything. So then there's no supernatural causes. There's no God. And they don't even realize it's like a guy standing on a tree branch, sawing off the branch, and the saw is in between his feet and the trunk of the tree. And he doesn't even realize, when this branch comes down, I'm coming down too. So, so again, it was this falling so much in love with the gift, reason, that we began to forget about and eventually oppose the gift giver, God Himself. Now, what postmodernism is, there's two ways of looking at it. One way is it's a reaction against modernism, okay? But then there's Thomas Oden, who argues that postmodernism should really be viewed not as something that which opposes modernism, but as ultra-modernism. In other words, modernism failed, and it led to postmodernism. Some view postmodernism as the exact opposite of modernism. Others, you see it as the next stage in modernism. I mean, what do you do when you find out that that, you know, modernism failed to find absolute truth, failed to solve man's problems? What's the next step for modernism? Well, Thomas Oden would say it's then ultra-modernism. It's acknowledging that human reason cannot find truth, and it's rejecting the whole concept of absolute truth. So we'll talk about it. I think there's truth to both sides of it. One sense, one is true. Another sense, the other is true. But we'll talk about postmodernism mainly as a rejection against modernism, and it acknowledges, hey, modernism failed to find absolute truth, failed to solve man's problems. And so now postmodernism says, okay, therefore there is no absolute truth, and man's reason cannot find truth. Well, yeah, obviously if there is no truth, our reason isn't going to help us to find truth anyway. Now, so that's a little bit about the background that produced postmodernism. Now, do we have any questions at this point or comments?
You can look back and then we can look forward, but they also got moving flat.
Yeah, and at this point, these guys didn't think the world was flat, but, you know, centuries earlier, that was the case. At this point, these guys, their science was getting pretty sophisticated. And now, here's a something that, like, a postmodernist would bring up. You know, these guys thought they had a corner on the truth. They really thought Newton got it right. Well, Newtonian physics, it turned, we thought, well, look at all this truth that we know. And then Einstein came along, and all of a sudden all that stuff that Newton had, it was stuff that worked to a certain degree, but it really wasn't true. And so now we have relativity. Well, now postmodernists are saying, well, because of quantum physics, we might trash relativity too. So, you know, we might just find rules that work. Pragmatism, but we don't really find truth. That's you know, some of the arguments that they would use.
Who's like the biggest dagger in the modern world?
That's a good question. Was the biggest dagger or the biggest downfall, the thing that the straw that broke the camel's back for modernism? To be totally honest with you, I don't think we can point to any one thing, because if we did, then we can point to the birth of postmodernism. But in reality, postmodernism in the early to mid-20th century, postmodernism was only used as a term for architecture. And then it wasn't until the latter half of the 20th century where we started to apply it to philosophy and things of that sort. So I mean, it wasn't something that we woke up in the morning and said modernism is dead. But it was something that gradually over time, some of the things that contributed to it, combining evolution and modernistic thought, we thought that man was growing up rationally to the point where, you know, we would evolve beyond wars. And then came World War I, so we called it, you know, the war to end all wars. But then came World War II. So things like wars, you know, and for every time we found a cure for a disease, we also found another way to blow the planet up. Okay, so, you know, just different things, but I think in the end it was an impossible task, and some thinkers acknowledged defeat earlier than others, but eventually a great majority of thinkers acknowledged defeat, that through reason alone we did not find all truth. There are things that are out of our grasp, okay? And we have not solved every problem. We are not going to create a utopia on Earth. How many people here have seen Signs? I just took that movie, that Mel Gibson movie, about aliens and stuff like that. And there's one point in the movie where the little boy tells his little sister that the stuff that is coming down now, this means that everything we know from science has changed. It's got to be trash. We got to rethink everything. He turns on the TV set and the newscaster says the same exact thing, okay, in different words. So the producer's trying to tell you something. The producer of this movie, what he's trying to tell you, he's trying to tell you that his movie, to a certain degree, is postmodern, acknowledging that modernism did not have all the answers, and there are mysteries that our reason cannot solve, and science put so many things in, put, you know, all of knowledge in a box. We need to open that box up. We need to come out of that box because there are things that really exist outside our box. There's more to life than what modernism told us. Now, it seems to me like the director of that movie, at least the way he portrayed postmodernism, he portrayed it more as a chronological postmodernism than an ideological postmodernism. In other words, when you speak of postmodernism chronologically, it's just after the age of modernism, once we realized we didn't have all the answers, then came the age of postmodernism, and now we're more open to the supernatural and to the mysterious, and we have a lot less confidence in human reason. And in that sense, I'm in agreement with them. Some people, though, will take postmodernism to the degree there is no absolute truth. Man can never find truth, and those guys are going way too far. But with this particular movie, seemed to me that the main theme he was coming out with was actually he was not opposed. I think his brand of postmodernism was saying the doors are now open for traditional religions to be viewed in a respectable manner.
So with your chart, with the new age pantheism and postmodernism coming together.
Yeah, I think that's Sire talks about postmodernism. I'm going to write that right page. On page 189, it's not a full-blown worldview. it's he talks about it as kind of postmodernism not really being a worldview, but actually as being an anti-worldview. In other words, postmodernism really doesn't give you anything positive. All it is a negative critique of everything else. So in the end, you know, if you're looking, if you're swimming in the ocean, and or if you're swimming in a lake and you're looking for rocks to cling on to, things to cling on to stay afloat, okay? It's not like postmodernism is one of these rocks you can go to and then say, okay, now I can rest here. All it is postmodernism says, we thought that was a rock, but it's actually just, you know, some vegetation or something, some seaweed, you grab it and it goes down. It's not going to hold you up. And the same with that, and the same with that. And so postmodernism is saying there are no rocks. And then these postmodernists act like they should feel comfortable because postmodernism is their rock. No. If there are no rocks, then even postmodernism is not a rock. It's not a foundation for us to rest upon. So postmodernism is a critique of all worldviews, but in the end, it falls prey to its own critique. And so what I would argue, and I think Sayers would agree with me, and I think J.P. Moreland is in agreement with me, postmodernism is not an end. It is a means. It's moving towards something, but it isn't the final destination, and it can't be. It doesn't have enough to offer. And so I believe postmodernism is going to move. It opens the doors to the ancient myths, the pagan myths, but I don't think it's, you know, in other words, people have to have something positive to believe. Postmodernism doesn't really give it to them. You do a lot of game playing. There's nothing positive to believe. And the closest worldview to it that gives you something positive to believe is New Age pantheism or neo-paganism or neo-spirituality. Well, postmodernism says, hey, well, we might as well bring back the ancient pagan myths, not because they're true, but because nothing is true. The New Age movement says we might as well bring back the ancient pagan myths because they're true. Even though the New Age movement contradicts itself and rejects all truth, the New Agers really do believe that New Age neo-paganism is true. Okay? That, you know, and so basically, postmodernism, there just isn't enough to sink your teeth into. It's got to give way to something else. And I think what it's going to give way to is a an intellectually respectable form of neo-paganism. So it probably won't call itself New Age, because everybody thinks it's Shirley MacLaine when you say that. So, you know, it'll be something, because there's a lot of New Agers out there, like Mikhail Gorbachev and Robert Mueller, who also consider themselves intellectuals. And so I don't know if they're just going to call it neo-spirituality or whatever, but it's going to be, I think postmodernism is going to give way to an earth-worshipping religion that is going to be, that quite possibly could be forced on mankind.
The Hindus, the Hindus,
History to them is cyclical. It's not really going anywhere. The physical world is an illusion. But, you know, when, you know, Hindus will talk about Gandhi, what a great life he lived, and they'll talk about supposed historical events of the past and stuff. So, you know, and with New Age pantheism, there's a little bit of Western thinking that is kind of that overlaps with it, but in the end, uh, you know, there'll be a lot, there's a lot of areas in New Age thoughtism, postmodernism, where they can't live consistently with their views. And so, you know, if there is no such thing as truth, then why is the New Age you're arguing that the New Age beliefs are true and Christian beliefs are false?
So are they going to the East and the New Age is going over there?
Yes. See, basically, if we put it in terms of Eastern, like Eastern thought and Western thought, what postmodernism does, okay, when modernism proclaimed the death of God, Nietzsche saw that that also entailed the death of truth, the death of morality, the death of meaning, but what he was not willing to acknowledge was it also entails the death of man. What C.S. Lewis called the abolition of man, what Francis Schaeffer called the death of man. And so basically what I'm getting at is postmodernism, as far as, you know, a postmodernist might be real optimistic about the future, but as far as I'm concerned, postmodernism proclaims, modernism proclaimed the death of God. Postmodernism proclaims the death of the West. So, if you reject Christ,